Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
I'm Arielle Lori, and this is the Blonde Files podcast, where I talk to experts, influencers, and inspirational people in the world of wellness and beyond. Whether it's mental health, spirituality, nutrition, gut health, hormones, exercise, meditation, entrepreneurship, beauty hacks, and procedures, I cover it here with real conversations and even realer guests. I know you're as curious as I am, so I'm asking the questions for you, and you get to listen in. Welcome to the show. I hope everybody is having an amazing week, and I'm so happy that you're here. And this is a really fun episode for me. I felt like I got to sit down with a girlfriend and just talk about real shit for like over an hour and record it and call it work. So one of the things that I love so much about podcasting, which I've talked about before, is how it has brought some really amazing people into my life beyond the screen. You know, I get to sit down and look at somebody and have real deep conversations about struggles, and in this case, spirituality and meditation and just our life experiences and ups and downs. And it's just such a refreshing thing in this day and age. So I really think you guys are going to enjoy this one. I always get lots of questions about meditation and spirituality, so we really delve into that and more. So my guest, Ava Johanna, is a spiritual business coach, host of the Alchemized Life podcast, and celebrity meditation teacher based out of Los Angeles, California. Whether on the podcast or in her one-on-one VIP program, Ava works with individuals to activate their soul's purpose, create powerful daily routines, and elevate every area of their life simply by adjusting their mindset through fully embodying the energy of empowerment and confidence. She has been featured on major wellness publications such as Mind Body Green, Wanderlust 35 Under 35, Lifestyle Magazine, and Yoga Journal. If you guys like this episode or you're enjoying the podcast in general, please take a second to rate, review, and subscribe. It goes a really long way in supporting the show and what I'm doing here, and I really appreciate it. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You're here. For everybody who doesn't know, I recorded an episode on Ava's podcast, and it's probably going to be out around the same time that this gets released. So go listen to The Alchemized Life. So good. I was binging it before you came here.
Oh my gosh.
I was listening to the episode with what's her name?
Marla Mattinson.
Oh my God.
Isn't she phenomenal?
I was like, I need to go see her with my husband and we need to do the work.
Yes. I was blown away, and it's so funny because my girlfriend recommended her, and she's like, you know, she's pricey, and I'm like, we'll do whatever it takes. And so we go to or we don't go, we have her over for a session, and I did not realize that she was like the creme de la creme of relationship coaches and like experts. Like, we went and saw a therapist afterwards that was different, and I was sitting there just like, oh my God, I'll never be the same. I'll never be the same, because she was so phenomenal. Wow. So yeah, highly recommend.
Can I ask what led you guys to go see her or to see other relationship therapists?
Yeah. So we got married in April of this past year. And, you know, when you get married, you don't really go into the relationship with a lot of or usually with your first marriage. Most of us don't go into the relationship having conversations about what it means to be married. A lot of like different values, I think, deeper down, of like just agreements that we have as far as what makes a good wife and what makes a good husband. And so we started exploring those questions together and realized that we really wanted support from someone in getting clear on being on the same page and making sure that we were right for each other. And this is like the first time that I'm actually sharing anything about this.
We just dove right in.
Yeah, dive right in. And I think that for us, it was just recognizing that there was so much love in our relationship, but wanting to make sure that both of us were able to really thrive as individuals too, and not compromise or, you know, mold ourselves into what the other person wants. Like, mm-hmm. all I want is for him to be the most fully expressed version of himself, and vice versa, and not also lose a part of me in him doing so. Mm-hmm. So yeah, therapy and talking to someone else and holding space for us to have those that communication was really essential, and just supporting us not like being in this echo chamber of our own issues.
That's so healthy. Yeah. Like, so healthy. I'm very impressed. I mean, I feel like therapy, and especially like any kind of therapy around like couples, there's a stigma, right? And you think like, oh shit, mm-hmm. like how did it go so wrong?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But I think it really is healthy. I love what you said about like an echo chamber, because when it's just the two of you,
you just go in circles.
You're going in circles, yeah. and you're reinforcing the same stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And like, it's very hard to have perspective.
Yeah, for sure. And I think to also like take your ego out of it too. And so to have someone there to just like kind of also like pause and like call you out on your bullshit too, and be like, do you understand, Ava, that you are like asking to be supported, but also like saying that you have to be in control?
Right.
So it was definitely eye-opening and helped us a lot. And, you know, Corey, initially when we went into it, I was like, I want to go see a therapist with you. And he had a lot of that resistance come up of, mm-hmm. I didn't realize that we were so bad. And there was a little bit of like unraveling this story, mm-hmm. that we're all told that like therapy equals unhappy life or unhappy marriage. And instead look at it as this opportunity for us to grow together. And like, as Marla says, like, if your relationship needs to be built on growth, not just on it being a marriage, and that's it, you know, or else it's dying.
Yeah. I think Dax Shepard, I listen to his podcast religiously.
Oh, you have the podcast?
Oh my God. It is so good. Armchair Expert.
Okay.
You're going to like,
oh, I think I've heard of it before.
Yeah. It's really, really good. Really interesting conversations. But he and Kristen have been going to therapy their whole marriage. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that's why we're still married.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like, I don't know, he's a proponent of that. It's funny though, like having somebody call you on your shit. I was in therapy this morning and we were talking about my marriage. I said, we see things differently. For example, he sees that every time we sit down to watch a show, we can't find something that we agree on. So I go upstairs and read. Whereas from my perspective, I see it as we find things that we like to watch often, but sometimes we don't, in which case I go up to read. And she mm-hmm. said, well, why don't you just stay all the time? Because obviously it's important to him. Mm-hmm. You guys don't get a lot of time together. And if he just wants to relax and watch something with you, like, even if you don't like it, maybe you should stay. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh,
yeah.
It had never crossed my mind before. You know, I was like, oh yeah, I guess that's like the compromise.
Yeah. And I mean, even if it's just like staying while he watches some show and reading at the same time, just like being in each other's presence. Cause I'm kind of like the same mentality too. I'm like, I don't want to just like watch TV to watch TV. Like, I want it to be something.
Yeah.
Or else I'm just going to do something else. And, I think more than anything, it's just like being in the energy. And that kind of like reminds me of the love languages. It's just getting really clear on like whatever your partner's love languages are, and being really aware.
Netflix.
Netflix is my love language. But being really aware of the way that they express and receive love and mm-hmm. just making it a priority to make sure that you're hitting that. For me, like yeah. my love language is gift giving. Like my, that's the way that I show love and that's the way that I would love to receive love. and so it's hard for me to like take a step back and be like, wait, this isn't Corey's love language. So right. even he knows that like when I'm giving him a gift that it's me expressing love, but mm-hmm. to take it a step further and show him love, I should really be touching him or right. giving him words of affirmation. So, yeah. you know, it's all about awareness though. And like yeah. really getting out of your own way and totally. Asking yourself like, what's important? What's my priority here? Is my priority to like show my partner love and make sure that they know that like I'm here for them? Or am I going to get stuck in like me type of mm-hmm. mentality of making sure that like only I'm covered? And I right. think that's where I was coming from a lot, is like making sure that I'm okay, because my entire life has been me against the world or carrying the whole weight of the world on my shoulders. So being in a relationship and being in a marriage is a totally different dynamic. Like mm-hmm. I'm not used to like having someone there to fall back on. Right. So it's new.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about that. How let's rewind and talk about like your younger life and kind of how you got to where you are today. You were homeless at 16, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I grew up in, like I said, Calabasas, Agora area. As mm-hmm. you know, it's very affluent, and had a great life. And around 16 years old, my mom and my stepdad decided to separate. And before that, things weren't great between them. So I was waiting for that moment to happen and really excited and celebrated my mom for finally gaining enough strength to make that decision. However, the systems weren't in place to really support us as a unit after she made that decision. And so very shortly after they separated, we were evicted from the apartment we moved into. The car was repossessed. We found ourselves living with different family members, neighbors, friends of my mom's, and eventually like going to the food bank every other Saturday to get food and groceries. And so it was really hard to be in such an affluent area and feel like I had nothing. Even though I know that I didn't have like absolutely nothing, I was just shown so much wealth around me that I really crumbled, and I turned to different drugs and vices to get me outside of this nothingness. And it was like really like something that made me feel full, mm-hmm. full of life, full of energy, away from all of the like reality of my situation. And it was really hard because it impacted how I showed up as an individual. I stopped caring about school. I stopped caring about what my career was going to be. I really just like went into this full on survival mode. And I dropped out of school and went into independent study and started working full time. And I worked at a restaurant and eventually was able to graduate high school. Luckily, like, don't know how that happened, but I did it. And I didn't apply for any colleges or anything because I didn't think that I would be good enough to get in. And I wanted to spare myself of any disappointment. I had experienced enough of it. And eventually just decided to move out of the area altogether and start fresh in San Diego. So I moved down to San Diego about 10 years ago and just went to community college. I worked at different restaurants and continued the partying and the really like bad spiral of drugs and alcohol. And abusive relationships, and eventually ended up moving back up to LA because I couldn't live with my roommates anymore. I had a really negative relationship with both of my roommates that I moved in with. And while I was up in LA, I got a DUI. And that was kind of like the first instance of me being like, I need to get my shit together. Did I never drink again? No. Did I never drink and drive again? No. But it was the first instance that I knew that what I was doing wasn't working, and the way that I was operating my life was either going to hurt me or hurt somebody else. And mm-hmm. so that was kind of that first step of, okay, maybe there's a better way. And I moved back down to San Diego after that. I got in with a little bit of a better group of friends that were more supportive and cared about me more, and started working in digital marketing and social media. And I continued partying, continued drinking, but was starting to kind of like figure out what I was meant to be doing in my life, and got really excited about work finally, and felt like I had a little bit of a purpose. And that purpose turned into, okay, like I could be a CEO one day. Mm-hmm. I could like really do this. I could be like that boss babe that like no one thought I could be. Like I'll show them at my 10-year reunion. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of like took that fire that I had for like partying, and that fire that I had for like not being ever in that position of being homeless again, and applied it towards work, and just turned into this like crazy work monster, basically, where I was working 10 to 12 hour days.
What were you doing?
I was a account strategist project manager.
Okay.
At a digital marketing company. We did marketing for the multifamily industry. So it was like not fun at all. But it was interesting to be able to do branding campaigns and creative design and work on websites and social media. So I got to learn a lot about the digital space throughout all of it. So I'm grateful for that. Mm-hmm. But the culture at the company that I was working at was just so awful. It was so awful. It was like the structure where they like take you to cool dinners and fun events. Like our Christmas party had we bought out this nightclub and Lil Jon performed. So it had all this like cool stuff,
right,
on like the weekends that was like team building and fun to make you think that like it was a fun, cool environment. But then like Monday through Friday, if not Saturday and Sunday, you were working like 12 hour days and almost like shamed if you didn't get all of your work done. Mm-hmm. And like just really, really abusive types, yeah, of situations that I knew were not going to be supportive of like my long-term mental health or my physical health. And I, at the same time, I was still partying just as hard. So I remember like I would work up until lunch, go sit out my car and like either nap or like be throwing up at the side of my car because I was so hungover and so sick from the day before. Like it was just such a like vicious cycle, mm-hmm, that I found myself in. And even though I was like making all of the money, had like the cool house, the cool clothes, was like in a okay relationship. Oh, no. I was with my husband, so I was in a great relationship.
good catch.
Yeah, good catch. And even though I was in a great relationship, I was still miserable. I was so miserable. And so I think that at that point, that was when my intuition started saying like, Ava, this is like, you're not in the right direction. Just because you think that money is going to like make you happy, just because you think that status is going to make you happy or having X, Y, and Z is going to make you happy, doesn't mean that it's actually going to make you happy. Right. And at that point, I got a promotion. And when I got that promotion, my intuition was like, nope, there's no amount of money on a paycheck that is ever going to make you happy. And so I ended up putting in my notice at my job. My now husband and I decided that we were going to move to South America. And I decided that when I moved to South America, that would be the last time that I would ever work for anybody again. And when we got back, I jumped straight into the wellness world and started teaching yoga, doing my coaching and my mentorship, eventually launching the podcast, and just like really, really starting to fine tune what it meant to be living in alignment, mm-hmm, and letting go of all of the, you know, external influences that played such a big role on my life in the first place, and stepping into a place where I was living and acting in integrity with what I knew to be true in my heart and what I knew to be authentic and just feel so real and, mm-hmm, good, and like just living from a place of love.
Okay, I have so many questions.
But I know, I shared a lot.
I love it. Okay, so first I want to ask what you think the drugs and alcohol were doing for you that whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, I know for me, and something that you said about like when you were younger was that you were using things to like fill something, mm-hmm, right? And I get so many messages from people on Instagram who aren't necessarily like quote-unquote alcoholics. Like, I believe I'm truly an alcoholic. There was nothing, you know, that would make me stop, not ending up in hospitals, not being no DUI. I mean, something that you said about like a DUI making you like think, oh, maybe it's a problem. I feel like that differentiates like hardcore alcoholics, mm-hmm, between people who like, mm-hmm, abuse it.
Yeah.
Because there's just nothing
that would come between me and my drugs or alcohol. That said, it was definitely doing something for me. It was filling what I think now was a spiritual void. But anyway, so people messaged me being like, you know, I don't think I'm an alcoholic, but I think I'm like, I need to examine my relationship here. And I always think, and I always suggest to like examine what it's doing for you. So yeah. I'm curious, like that whole time, because you had a relationship and you had a job and you had the things, and obviously you were unhappy. So what do you think the substances were doing for you?
I think that it lubricated my life in a way to make it feel acceptable. You know, we look at, I mean, so many of us say it's like a social lubricant. It makes you feel like more comfortable to like be this like big bubbly version of yourself. But I think for me, yes, it was that, but it also made the awful job okay, because I knew at the end of the day I could just go home and drink or like do blow or whatever it was that I was doing. And I'm also like pretty open about like what drugs that I was doing. Sometimes I listen to podcasts and I'm like, what drugs were they doing?
Okay, so what were you doing?
But yeah, I mean, like I would go home and be really excited because me and my like roommate would egg each other on and be like, yeah, let's snort a line of Adderall, which is so disgusting. Yeah. Like not good at all.
I can still taste it when you say that.
Oh God. Yeah. It does not taste good. But we would just like egg each other on. And I mean, that's kind of a whole different story, but it was this like lubricant to life that I knew that regardless of how bad my day at work was or how bad a fight was that I got in with a friend or in my previous relationship before Corey, regardless of how bad he treated me, I knew that I would feel better once I had a couple drinks or once I smoked some pot or once I took some Molly. Like it, I knew that I'd feel better because I had that first high, that first buzz, and that was everything, you know? So it just allowed life to be, it allowed all of the shitty things in life to be easier rather than actually looking at those things and asking myself, well, why can't I just fine tune all of this and shift it so it actually is good and I don't have to just accept and settle for a job that I don't like. You know, I was in that mentality that so many of us have, is like, you don't actually have to like your work. Like work's not for liking. You know, I think so many of us have that mentality, and I got to a point where I was like, wait a second, like maybe that's not true. Maybe I can actually do something that I enjoy and not have to like numb myself for every other hour that I'm not working.
Yeah, it like makes the intolerable tolerable.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of like, instead of maybe examining the relationship, I mean, you can look at the behavior, the substance use or the drinking or whatever, and ask like, what is it doing for me? But you could also look at like, examine everything else in your life and be like, what isn't working for me?
Why am I, what am I avoiding? What am I avoiding feeling?
So how did you shift out of that?
Curiosity and spirituality. I think, you know, my girlfriend invited me to a yoga class, and I had taken yoga before. I actually took yoga as an elective in college and literally was like, who are these crazy people? Like I was like sitting in a straddle at the back of the class just texting. I'm like, fuck this. Like, no, I'm not doing this. And then, you know, a girlfriend invited me to a yoga class while I was in the midst of all of this mess, and it was this coming home. I had never felt that connected to my body before, and I had never felt a sense of peace and relief that being sober had like ever given me. It was always like I had kind of almost felt something similar to that like high from actually being high, but I had never felt a like spiritual high before. And so it was just getting curious, and once I had that like first taste of a yoga class, I started questioning how else can I get this. So I started reading books in personal development. I started journaling and creating vision boards and having deeper conversations and stepping away from spending my Friday and my Saturday at the same nightclub in San Diego and then waking up and having like Trader Joe's appetizers that are the frozen appetizers and mimosas with my friends.
So wait, that was like my life to a T.
Oh my God.
The Trader Joe's. Oh my God.
The little,
like the gyoza.
We literally would go to the nightclub on Friday, and it smelled like shit. It was called Basement. It's still around actually. And it literally smells like a basement. And we'd go there, get so blacked out drunk, go home, wake up the next morning,
and our hangover would be fed with Trader Joe's frozen foods. Yep. Champagne, like Cook's champagne, not good champagne. Yeah. Yeah. And
what was
like
the other one, like Arbel or something.
Oh, Korbel. Yeah. Either of those. And like a little bit of Coke. Yeah. And then we would go to that same exact nightclub.
Yeah.
That smelled like shit. And do it again that same night. Like, it was wild that was my life for so long. And that was before I met Corey. That was when I was in a really, really abusive relationship. So I just send that girl, past version of me so much love because she was just so lost.
Yeah.
So lost. But yeah, it was stepping away from all of those and opting instead for like yoga on a Saturday morning instead and spending my Friday night with my girlfriends watching Gilmore Girls or like creating art at the house. I was still smoking pot though. So I was smoking pot and like having like fun creative girls nights and arts and crafts and stuff and like would wake up on Saturday. Yeah, it's definitely a lesser evil. And I would wake up on Saturday and feel good and we'd cook brunch and go to yoga and then go down to the beach. And I was like, wow, this feels amazing. This is so cool. It was unlike anything I'd experienced from like 16 years old to 20 years old. And I just kept like chipping away at that curiosity and continuing to get interested in breath work and meditation, eventually hiring a mentor and really just like diving into the spiritual lifestyle. And I'm just so grateful for that first yoga class. I'm so grateful for all of the mess too, because had I not hit rock bottom, I wouldn't have been searching for these tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes what it takes and everybody's bottom is different, but I can relate to every single thing that you just said. It's so crazy. Like I hear my story over and over again in recovery, but like not that specific. Like that was like we would have been friends.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm impressed when I hear other people's stories of like what it took them and then how they turned it around. I'm impressed that like a yoga class was kind of what changed the trajectory. Like for me, it was dying in a hospital.
Yeah.
For other people, I know so many people whose rock bottom was just emotional.
Mm-hmm.
I really like hearing other people's stories, but at the same time, I think people kind of, instead of looking for ways to identify, they look for ways to like separate themselves and especially people who have substance use problems, you know, they can be like, well, my bottom wasn't that bad. So I don't need to change anything. But I think it's just, you know, when you've reached it. Right.
Yeah. And you also know when you're like, you're bullshitting yourself, you know, I think we can become our own greatest bullshitters. Mm-hmm. And if you have that feeling whatsoever of like, maybe I should like reel it back a little bit, that feeling and that voice inside is only going to grow louder and only going to grow louder. And you can either be in service of answering that call and searching for a better way, or you can continue to be in service of the voice of what I think is resistance and fear and ego, because that's where we play small. That's where we keep ourselves in the pain of whatever our existence is and whatever it means to settle or to just accept or avoid. So we can choose the path of, you know, stepping into our fullest expression, our greatest expression of ourselves, or we can choose to continue being in pain.
Mm-hmm.
But we have the option, and we're the only one that's going to make the decision for ourselves. No one else is going to make it for you, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I want to ask you like how you would define spirituality, because I think a lot of people confuse spirituality with like religion, or like even for me, I would say I'm spiritual, but not religious, but I believe in God.
Yeah.
So people are like, wait, what?
Yeah,
like
their eyes start crossing.
Yeah. And when I told people on Instagram that you were coming on, I had some people sending questions like how do I become spiritual if I don't believe in God, or like if I'm an atheist, or if I don't understand religion?
Yeah.
Or, like, how did you get in touch with spirituality and how would you define that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's such a good question. And I think it's a moving target for every single person. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, hitting your bottom is different too. I find myself exactly in the same, like, I think we're the same person. I think we're holding up a mirror to each other right now. But I find myself in the same boat where I don't think I'm religious, but I do believe in God. And I definitely think that I'm spiritual. And initially going into all of this, there was this resistance that I had that was like, wait, but I'm not religious. I don't believe in God. Like, God would never have done all of the things that happened to me when I was a kid had I, like, if a God existed. And I remember, like, so often I would be like crying in the shower, just like asking, like, why, God? Like, if you're there, why? And I mean, now I realize that everything happens for a reason, and mm-hmm. that's why I'm here today. But I think for someone that's starting their spiritual journey, it's asking, like, how do I feel connected? How do I feel connected to myself and to this place where it's almost hard? There aren't words to describe it, I would say. But this kind of, like I said, and when I experienced that yoga class, this coming home feeling that feels so natural and so authentic and just feels so true. And I think we can find it in so many different ways, whether it's our meditation practice or journaling or walking on the beach and being in nature, staring into somebody's eyes mm-hmm. and just having a conversation with them. We can find that connection. And for me, my spiritual practice is a daily consistent practice of simply coming back to that space of knowing that, like, I am connected to absolutely everything. And mm-hmm. so whether that means I'm connected to the chair that I'm sitting on, or I'm connected to my breath, or I'm connected to my heartbeat, or I'm connected to my angels and my guides and all of my past loved ones, whatever it might be, just coming back to that space of knowing that I'm connected, knowing that I'm supported, and knowing that I'm guided. Because we can look at it from the perspective of that I'm guided and I'm mm-hmm. supported, and, you know, I don't know why this is happening, but everything happens for a reason, and I'm sure one day I'll know why, or maybe I won't, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Or we can look at it as I'm alone and no one's looking out for me and the weight of the world is on my shoulders and I'm responsible for everything coming to place in my life. And I've been in that position before. And it's fucking lonely. Mm-hmm. It's so lonely. And it feels so much better to know that whether it's God or my highest self or whoever, mm-hmm. that I am supported and that I'm not alone and that there is purpose for any of my pain. There is purpose for any of my pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is so important. I think the greatest gift of all of this, and I don't know if you agree, but it's being able to use the hard things that we've gone through and the struggles and all of that and turning it into purpose. Mm-hmm. And everybody has that opportunity somehow. Like, we're not unique just because we have a platform or whatever. There are so many ways to use whatever you've been through to help other people.
Yeah. I mean, and I think I really am hoping that over this next year, like, a lot of us are going to start to wake up and realize that having a following or having a platform does not mean that you have, like, any more validation right. over what you're sharing yeah. and your life and what you're here to offer. In fact, I remember the first time that I, like, recognized this. I was at Mind Body Green Revitalized 2 years ago, and there were phenomenal speakers talking about all these different topics, and some of them had little to no social media presence mm-hmm. at all, and they were making such a big impact on me. And I realized at that point, I'm like, your following does not matter at all.
Yeah.
It does not matter at all. You can still have such a powerful message and a powerful purpose and an impact on so many different people. You just do it in a different way. And I right. mean, I think that a lot of us still do think that the only way to be successful or the only way to have an impact is to have some massive following. And mm-hmm. I really hope that over these next few months in this year of 2020, we, like, get out of that mentality, because yeah. I think it's preventing so many people from, like, really stepping up and shining their light that the world, like, desperately needs. Like,
right.
for you to hold back and not share your message or not share your story or not share your gifts means that you are, like, literally not answering people's prayers. Like, mm-hmm. people are praying for the support and the guidance that you can give. And right. by holding back just because you don't have the ability to swipe up or whatever it might be is really just doing a disservice.
Yeah. And I have that same hope. And I think maybe it's just my perspective, but I feel like people are being more cognizant about where they're putting their energy, who they're allowing in, right? Like, who they're following. Like, we have control mm-hmm. over that and over what we see, unless we, like, go on the explore page.
Yeah.
Which, just don't do that. but, and I think people are, like, people are craving how do I put this? I think people are like craving this feeling of relating to other people. Mm-hmm. I think like even though we're more connected than ever, we're more alone and like isolated than ever also. And when people are following like just like Kylie Jenner and like all these people, not to call her out, and you know, that's what you're feeding yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think people are getting more conscious of that, hopefully, and following someone who they can relate to, even if they have 500 followers or 50 followers or whatever. Like if someone's posting recipes that you like and they have 100 followers, like keep, you know, like follow them. You don't have to.
You know, one of the things that I've been really diving into is like the energy of what, like the energy that we are creating in. Mm-hmm. And so when you were saying that about like Kylie Jenner, like the Explore page and stuff, there are so many people that are online just like creating from an energy of comparison and lack and just a not enoughness. And whether we like it or not, when we're looking at their photos, when we're watching their stories and they are sharing from that place, that's what we're absorbing too, you know? And so that's why I think you, like, when you are watching someone's stories that's like really living in alignment and just like excited about what they're bringing to the world, or just not like creating and sharing from a place of lack or doubt, like you feel that. You're like, I want some of what she's having. Like, give me some of that, you know? So I think that it's important that all of us recognize that when we are on social media, like, are we consuming content that not only is making us feel comparison, but is likely created from this element of comparison? And I don't like calling out too much stuff, but like, you know, the pages that are just like tagging Fashion Nova or whatever those brands are, like, are those really supporting you and feeling good? Or are you just thinking, oh gosh, I wish I had that outfit, or I wish I had her hair?
Right.
Or, you know, if those are the thoughts that are going through your head when you're on social media, you're walking away in a like fragmented state where you're feeling less than.
Right. And it can happen so quickly. Like, I know for me, I'm very choosy, I guess, about who I follow. There are people who I've followed since 4 years ago, and then, but like, I don't follow anybody who makes me feel worse about myself. And but all it takes is like seeing one thing. Like, it's so crazy how it can completely just change your mood in like a fraction of a second. If you see like just anything that triggers whatever it is in you. And so like the fact, not to like go off on a tangent, but that like there are young girls and women like who are following, not to call out accounts, but like the ones that are just posting like gratuitous selfies and money and like, you know, obviously not coming from like the greatest place. It's just kind of heartbreaking.
I can't
imagine like seeing that as a younger person and being like, well, why don't I look like that? Totally. Why don't I have that?
I mean, my little sister is 17 years old. She's autistic and is so connected to her phone because she doesn't know how to like have a conversation like this. She doesn't have the verbal capacity to have this type of conversation, and so she feels most connected through her phone. But at the same time, all that she's seeing is all of these different accounts of women that don't look like her, or people that are, you know, not showing up online as like role models, you know. There's just, because we all have the ability to like be a celebrity on social media, that it's just different. Like, I think about when we were younger, like we had actual role models, you know, like we looked at I'm trying to think of like some actual role models that I had besides like Britney Spears. But you know, like everyone, you have access to everyone's life, and so you can easily like romanticize these other people that are your age or maybe a little bit older, and think that the way that they live and how they've presented themselves is like the end all be all. And if you're not living like that, you get yourself into this space of comparison or doubt or influence. And it was like we were saying before we hit record, you know, it can be so nuanced too, where we don't even know that we're walking away with this, this comparison or this lack or this doubt. But then, you know, an hour later we start having all of this negative thoughts in our head and we're like, how did I get into this space? Like, where did this come from?
And I think especially if you're kind of being fed that all the time and that's kind of your baseline, like you might not even realize that it's impacting you because it's just constant. So, Okay. So can you just talk about like the most impactful things that you did to like tap into your spiritual life?
Yeah, yeah. So meditation has been the biggest. And I know you and I like totally nerded yes. out in our conversation about meditation. And that was something that I had so much resistance to. I literally was like, maybe I'm just not the type of person that needs meditation. Now, like, I look back at that version of myself and I'm like, how sweet.
Yeah.
How cute. Meditation and breathwork have been the biggest for me. Those are the two practices that I come back to every single morning and make sure that I do before I do anything else with my day. And it just helps, again, support me in like connecting to that power within me. And also just taking a moment to ask, like, how can I be of service today? How can I live intentionally today and from my heart space today? And rather than take 5 million actions that I don't know which one's working and which one's not, maybe take a couple aligned actions, work a little bit less, work smarter, and be more in tune with like what is actually fulfilling me in my personal life and in my career. So my meditation practice is to sit down and to just visualize a like gold spotlight coming down over me. And I almost as if like you can feel like yourself bathing in the sun, like that feeling of like warm sun on your body. I just like visualize that shining down on me, absorbing it. And I kind of just like make this visualization like that is me receiving the support of my guides and of my highest self and my intuition and the universe and God. Like that is me receiving. And I just take a moment to receive. And in that space, I will silently say to myself, thank you for showing me how I can be of service today. And after that, I give myself anywhere from like 10 minutes to 20 minutes of meditation and whatever comes up throughout my meditation of different ideas and things that I can talk about on my Instagram stories or ways that I can support my private clients or podcast themes that I can move forward with. I'll get out of my meditation and write them down and start to journal for a little bit. Before I move into my meditation, I'll do some type of breath work. I am trained in pranayama, which is an Eastern breathwork practices, and are really powerful ways for just moving out energy from the body. And so
I need to do that.
Yeah. That's definitely where the most resistance comes in. For me, meditating is so easy. The breathing, because it's a little bit more action, I'm not just like sitting there receiving. That's when my ego will be like, you don't really have to do it today.
Right.
But I know that when I'm not doing it, I'm just like basically like stepping on the hose of like releasing energy of like whatever I've like picked up from other people throughout the day, especially like we were saying, like living in LA, you know, I just absorb energy left and right. And so the breathwork practice for me is really a way for me to release that energy. So I'm moving forward throughout my day with a clean slate versus taking in whatever anyone else had like projected onto me beforehand.
I need that so bad.
Yeah. It's powerful. I have some videos on my Instagram.
Okay.
But those are the two practices that have like made me feel the most connected that I default back to every single day. And that has really allowed me to like step into that next level version of myself, you know, not the woman that plays small, not the woman that lets fear or resistance or her ego guide the way, but instead the leader, the healer and the guide and the woman that already has it all, the woman that feels really confident, that's able to hold space for herself and for other people and really embodies the light and that abundance that we're all kind of searching for.
Love that. Yeah, meditation is powerful. And I don't know if you feel this way, but like I've only been doing it like a year and a half.
Okay.
But I've been doing TM, which I talk about all the time, which is 20 minutes in silence twice a day. And if I don't do it, I feel like off my rocker.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I didn't do it today. but like, it's such a powerful way to start the day. The question that I get all the time is, well, kind of like what you said, like, I think people feel like, well, maybe it's just not for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think people have a misconception, right, of like what meditation actually is, too. Like, you have to turn off your brain and turn off your thoughts and not think of anything. And like, of course, nobody is going to feel capable of that because that's like the function of your brain to think. And like you said, like, for me, that's when so many of my creative ideas come. And when I think like I'm given the answers to things that I can't come up with on my own mm-hmm. and all of that. It's like such a time of receiving, yeah. like you said. So how should somebody try to start if they are one of those people that feels like I can't do it, or maybe I don't need to?
Yeah.
And they're just yeah. lost.
So my biggest thing, I think, is that like one, for hundreds of years ago, maybe not even hundreds of years ago, but a while ago, people didn't think that they needed to brush their teeth every day. And now if you don't brush your teeth every day, people think of you as a crazy person right. and you likely don't have teeth. And I think that 100 years from now, people are going to look at you as crazy if you don't meditate and if you mm. don't take time for stillness for yourself, because it is such a essential practice of like cleaning your brain and cleaning your mind, you know? And like you said, it's a time when you're able to receive support and answers to things that you're not able to figure out on your own when you're just moving through your day, like so caught up in noise. And so I think the most important part for people to know is that this practice is not just for the eyes closed experience. It's really for your eyes open experience. You mm-hmm. are enhancing your life outside of your meditation cushion or your bed or wherever you choose to meditate. It's not about the 20 minutes or the 10 minutes or the 5 minutes. It's about the other 98% of your day. Mm-hmm. I mean, meditation itself, if you're doing a 20-minute practice once a day or twice a day, that's 3 to 5% of your day impacting your brain, which is responsible for 100% of everything that you're doing mm-hmm. in your day. And so why would you not take that 3% of your day mm-hmm. to help support the 97% of your day? Yeah. And if you really struggle with the I can't sit still or I can't get my mind to turn off, just allow yourself to be compassionate about that, because it gets easier. It does yeah. get easier. And then some days it's hard, you know, that's what it means to be human. We don't just have this like linear trajectory of like, once we start on a path, everything is easy from that point forward. I mean, what part of your life have you actually experienced that to be true? Mm-hmm. So I think just understanding that you're human and that some days you're not going to want to sit still. And some days your mind is going to be moving a million miles a second, but that's not the point. The point is that you're carving out time to sit with yourself. And if you can sit with yourself, you can create space for anything in your life. You mm-hmm. can create space to process hard emotions. You can create space to be creative and connect to your intuition. You can create space to feel things in a way that you may not have been able to feel before. And sometimes that's uncomfortable, and sometimes it feels really beautiful. But we all need to do it. I mean, mm-hmm. like at a certain point I remember I was like, I'm not going to like really push people to meditate if they don't want to. And now I'm like, you need to meditate. You need to, because there's so many things, there's so many benefits to it. I mean, yeah. we are in a constant state of fight or flight. And within the first 30 to 45 seconds of meditation, our brains start to release all the feel good chemicals of serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin. And, what we're doing is sending alkaline receptors throughout the body. And so all of the chemicals of like the stress hormones and like cortisol are getting sent throughout our body when we're in a state of fight or flight. And so when we take that time to meditate, we're sending the alkaline chemicals through the body. And so that prevents aging, it prevents inflammation in the body, which then prevents diseases and cancers. And so it's just, for me, it's such a no-brainer mm-hmm. that anyone would want to do this healthy habit for themselves.
Right. It's like, if you could take a pill that would do all of that, you would do it in a, you would yeah. take it in a second.
Yeah.
No questions
yeah.
asked.
It's just like taking a pill for 10 minutes, yeah. you know?
Yeah. And you come to crave it. I know I do. Like,
yeah.
Because mm-hmm. once you experience that feeling, like it's better than a nap. It's better than a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. It's better than like anything
yeah.
that I can think of. And
like literally better than a nap yeah. and literally yeah. better than a cup of coffee.
Yeah. And more energizing.
Yeah.
More. It's just, yeah. Yeah. And like something that they say in TM, but I'm sure this applies to all kinds of meditation, is that like, even if you do struggle, because everybody is going to mm-hmm. like, I have times where I'm like totally in the zone and times where my brain is just monkey brain and it's like, mm-hmm. and like will not stop. But they say, you know, you don't judge the meditation. You judge how you, or they don't use the word judge, but like how you feel after.
Yeah.
And like it has tentacles, right? So like, even if you feel like you weren't able to get into it and whatever, like maybe later on in the day, something happens and you're not like reactive, yeah. like knee jerk, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's affects reach everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And my meditation teacher and the program that I went through, it's called One Giant Mind. He shares that, you know, when anything comes up in your meditation, whether it's a thought or wanting to move around, it's actually just your body releasing any of the stress associated with it. And so good. That's a good thing. We want that to happen.
Yeah, it's like the inward strokes and the outer strokes or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think of that every time because it's crazy. Like your brain, I feel like, especially in the beginning, isn't used to slowing down like that.
Yeah.
And I would notice, like, I would have the urge to like do something with my hands and like reach for my, play with my hair or like shift. And like, it was just, and I would think like, oh, this is just stress being released. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, like it passes and then you're like deeper.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Now I want to go meditate.
I know, right?
I'm going to this afternoon. I've been like, all right, I can do like 3 o'clock. If I do after four, it just keeps me up.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. You're not really supposed to meditate like after like 5 or 6, I think, because then you're just going to be wired the rest of the night.
It's crazy. Nobody believes it until they do it.
I know.
Okay. So let's talk about spirituality and business. How did you get there?
So by getting sick of my own shit, to be honest. I mean, like I said, I had this like hustle mentality. Once I entered the corporate space, that was what I was shown. It's like, if you work hard enough, if you work enough hours, you will be successful. You will get the promotion. If you are the best, that's how you will be successful. And I didn't really realize until this past year that I had adapted that in my wellness business and in my career as a yoga teacher and with my podcast and my mentorship that I was running in 2019. And I realized that I had taken all of the energy and the hustle and the muscling through that I did in my corporate job and simply just applied it to my own business and building my own business, which was great. You know, I was able to be successful. I was able to work with top brands. I launched my podcast. My podcast does great. I filled out my coaching program. Perfect. But it was still operating under that same way. And part of the reason why I didn't want to work for anybody else was because I didn't want to continue working in that same way. Mm-hmm. And so I, again, came back to that knowing there has to be a better way. And I think that that's kind of like the theme of my whole journey, is that I'm constantly like in this state of, there's got to be a better way for me to do this. And spirituality was really that answer to it. I realized that buying the webinar, buying the program, enrolling in the course wasn't actually going to bring me success. But the common denominator of all of those successful launches and all of those successful entrepreneurs was the energy that they had behind what they were bringing into the world. Same exact thing as we were saying with like how people show up on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Are you actually excited about what you're bringing, or are you bringing it into the world from the space of, I should be doing this because I saw someone else doing this, or I should start a podcast because everyone else is starting a podcast. Right. We can get out of that mindset and instead come back to our meditation practice or breathwork practice or journaling or walking on the beach, whatever it might be, and ask ourselves what feels really authentically true and in alignment for me. Like, what do I get so jazzed up about and so excited about that I would, like, in a moment as a consumer would buy this, and as a creator I'm going to be so lit up about sharing this with my audience. And so I stopped focusing so much on the strategy of the business and building it, and instead started focusing on the soul of the business. I hired a business coach that I knew was rooted in spiritual practices and energetic practices, and decided to just like fully immerse myself in how she built her business and be supported by her in that way. Mm. And it has been honestly like life-changing for me, because I'm not operating from this masculine like do role anymore. Instead, I'm allowing myself to like sit back and receive, which was what I wanted all along. And just like taking that first yoga class, that coming home feeling, I experienced it again in my business. And so I knew that because I had experienced it in my own business, that there was an opportunity for me to share those same practices, those same strategies, so to speak, I'm doing air quotes for everyone, of tuning into your soul, tuning into your heart versus trying to just build a business out of like full on marketing strategy. And mm-hmm. because someone else created this roadmap of A to Z of how to get it done.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that's such a hard thing to do now, because we are able to see what everybody else is doing and how, mm-hmm. and it's like, it's going back to the comparison thing. Like, how do I not compare myself to the next person who's doing something similar in the same realm? And, but they did this, and why am I not doing that? And why do they have this and that? And it's really hard to kind of detach from that, I think. Like, I'm curious to hear, without you giving away, you know, all of your strategies, like what the most transformative things were, like the shifts. Mm-hmm. I know for me, like I got to a breaking point again. Like that's how I operate. I have to hit bottoms with everything before I'm willing to make a change.
Yeah.
And like I had a bottom, which I talked about a few podcasts back, where last spring I was like, okay, I have to like sign with a big agency. And that's what's like going to be the next thing, because mm-hmm. that's what all the other influencers mm-hmm. are doing, and the ones that I want to do what they're doing and get the book deal and da 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 and all of that. And I had this like in my head, and they reached out to me and like we were interviewing, and this was going to be it, and then they just ghosted me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I still think it's rude. I'm like, you can just tell me, like, if it's not a good fit. Yeah. But I like spiraled out mm-hmm. because everything was riding on that, and it steered me though, which is like the amazing thing, mm-hmm. right? Like I feel like and I was talking about this with Shanae Alexander in another podcast mm-hmm. where we were like, the struggles in our life are like what guide us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that steered me into like a lot of meditation and a lot of reading and a lot of like conversations with other people in the industry and spiritual people and like my husband, and realizing like that's not what's true for me. Like that's not how I operate. That's not what my mission is. Like not, and it like brought me home mm-hmm. to the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm curious, like how did you kind of shift how you were operating before to now?
Yeah. I mean, one, I'm happy to share like anything, because I like to operate from a place of abundance and I feel like holding back on anything is just like feeling like this, like me energy again. So I'm happy to share anything, and always love sharing different, tools and practices on my Instagram and on my Instagram stories and through my podcast too. But it was slowing down mm-hmm. a lot, you know, just like you did, coming back to meditation and having really deep, insightful conversations with people that I wasn't comparing myself to. Mm-hmm. And starting to turn all of my attention inward and ask for guidance inside of me versus look at what other people were doing. Because I found that so many times that I would and then try to like replicate what someone else was doing, and it wouldn't work out the same way that they did it, I'd be like, well, something must be wrong with me then.
Right.
And then I started to doubt myself. I started to find that I felt unworthy of success. And I think that when we get to that point, it's like, no, we need to like take a step back. And I think that's why it's really important for us to instead focus on like the energy of our business and our excitement behind our business and the soul of our business versus trying to follow what someone else is doing, because we don't want to get into that position of feeling like, what is wrong with me because something didn't work out? Because that's not the case. It's just that we're not taking action from a place that's in alignment with our truth. Mm-hmm. We're taking action from a place that's in alignment with someone else's truth. Mm-hmm. So again, it was getting really, really quiet and meditating a lot and journaling and getting to the bottom of, one, why I was operating from that place for so long, recognizing that it was my intense need to control and my intense need to be in a state of action, because that's how I felt safe, mm-hmm. and just allowing myself to release those beliefs and those stories that I had stored up from my teenage life, mm-hmm. and decide to choose a path that felt much more in alignment with who I wanted to become. And so I stopped reflecting on who I used to be and started asking myself, who do I want to become? And what is required of me to become that woman? What is required of me to operate a business that makes over six figures? What is required of me to hold space for a higher caliber of a client that's ready to like really take massive action in our business and make 5 figures a month? Like, what is required of me to be that woman? Mm. And I asked those questions in my meditation practice, and I would journal afterwards, and I would write down who that woman was, how people viewed her, how I felt about success, how I felt about love and money and career. And I realized that a lot of what I had been thinking wasn't lined up with that, those qualities and those characteristics of what I call Ava 2.0, my next level version of myself. And then from that point forward, it was intentionally making sure that every single morning when I woke up, I put on that version of myself. I would mm-hmm. visualize myself putting on that woman. Like, I literally have like a Pinterest board with the outfit that she's wearing at the end of 2020. And and like really, really had fun with it and got into this energy of like playfulness and lightness, and allowed myself to lean into what it meant to build a business from a place of lightheartedness and not a place of muscling through, but instead a place of faith and trust that I am being guided and I am being supported, and the money is of course going to come, and my work is of massive value. And I just kept showing up every single day, being in service of that message, being in service of the women that I wanted to support, and being in service of that next level version of myself. And every single time that resistance would come up, and still comes up, let's be real. Mm-hmm. Every single time that it comes up, I ask myself, would Ava 2.0 be like, how would she respond to this? Mm-hmm. And checking in with myself. And from that point forward, it's the awareness and then taking action. Like, like I said earlier, you know, you're the only person that's going to like make the choice to change your life. Right. And so if you know with pretty like sure clarity whether something is in service of your past self or whether something is in service of your future self, at that point, it's on you to make the choice. Yeah. And it's okay if you misstep along the way. Again, we're human.
Yeah.
But the goal is to, over time, focus more on being in service of our future self, because that's how we become her.
Hmm. I love that. I'm going to visualize Arielle 2.0.
Yes.
I'm not even kidding. I am like so into this.
Yes. It's powerful. It's so powerful because it's getting into a place of like feeling it in your body, right. You know? And do you follow any of Dr. Joe Dispenza's work?
A little bit.
Okay. Yeah. So when we talk about manifestation, it's not only just like thinking positive thoughts or like mm-hmm. visualizing yourself, but it's actually also like feeling into what it would mean to manifest that thing. Mm-hmm. And so when we can feel in what it means to have the cookbook deal and like to be, you know, on tour and mm-hmm. sharing all of these recipes and getting all of these DMs from people, which I'm sure you already do, that are like, oh my God, I love these cookies. Like, my family's so healthy now, whatever it might be, to like feel into that and get really excited mm-hmm. by that. We are literally breaking down electrons in the quantum field. And in the quantum field, all of these different realities exist, as Dr. Joe Dispenza says. I'm mm-hmm. probably not quoting him in the best way, but the book is Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself for anyone interested. And when we can really feel into it, we bring our manifestation closer to us because we start to embody that reality. And the more that we embody that reality, the more that it becomes a reality.
Right.
And we don't have to worry so much about the how. Instead, we just have to worry about getting ourselves into that space every damn day. Like, mm-hmm. that is my priority every damn day, to be that version of myself that already has all of the things that I'm manifesting.
Mm. Powerful. I love that. Okay, so I'm curious how in business, like, you kind of touched on it when you were talking about that, but like how you can still pursue growth, and because obviously like you have to have goals, right, mm-hmm. of some sort. So how do you have those without compromising mm-hmm. the spiritual aspect of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they don't have to be separate. Like, I think right. they can coexist together. We can still want to make $250,000 or $500,000 mm-hmm. or $1 million and be spiritual, you know?
Yeah.
There's nothing spiritual about being broke.
Yeah.
And I think that it is having them both on the same page. So we have our goals and we also have our spiritual practice, because we know that the two influence each other. You know, and knowing that, like, without our spiritual practice, without a practice of like connecting to ourselves on a daily basis, we likely will not be able to bring the goals to fruition, or it's going to take longer, or it's going to be a path of a lot of resistance. And mm-hmm. so for me, my spiritual practice is my opportunity to take the path of least resistance towards all of my goals, mm-hmm. and to also trust that I might not know the entire journey of how I'm going to get to those goals, but I have faith that if I stay committed to these practices and that I stay committed to being in service, that those are going to come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. Do you think that our paths are already formed for us? Or do you like, do you think it's all predestined? Mm. Or do you think that we can carve our own?
I think that we have soul lessons to learn in our lifetime, and how those lessons are expressed are kind of up to the choices that we make. Mm-hmm. But overall, we come into this lifetime with karmic lessons mm-hmm. to learn and to karma to rid ourselves of. And it's so funny because I've been asked that question on a podcast before, and I think I gave a very similar answer. I think that their lessons are what we're meant to learn. How we can express that, though, is dependent upon our choices. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I kind of feel like you do. I mean, I feel like you can either live in alignment with the universe or your higher power or your God or mm-hmm. whatever, your spirit, you know, whatever you want to call them, you can live in alignment with that and you'll be guided, or you can live willfully and not in alignment with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, I guess I'm not really answering it. It's something that I'm curious about, which is why I asked.
Yeah.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, like, it's mapped out.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, like, obviously there are different twists and turns, and you can look back on your life. That's the best thing, I think, is like looking back and seeing how like little things that happened have guided you to where you are.
Totally. Today. Yeah. I mean, I work with my clients and have them build out synchronicity lists, and I'm like, write everything down. Like, even the shitty stuff that's happened, write it all down that you can recognize have guided you to this point. And I think it just really highlights that, like, even in the times when we are asking ourselves, like, what is going on? Why is this happening? You know, what does this all mean? You know, as your example of like the management company last mm-hmm. year, we can look at it as, oh my God, things aren't going as I plan, or, okay, I don't understand why this is happening and it sucks, but I know deep down, like in the depths of my heart, that there is a reason for this.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said earlier, to just be in that state of faith just feels so much more comforting
totally.
Than feeling like we have to do everything on our own.
Yeah, I was going to say that's like something that I've learned to do over the past 6 years, is to live in that faith.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I don't fully understand it all the time, and it's constantly, my understanding of it is constantly evolving.
Yeah.
But just like, you can either be in fear or you can be in faith. You can't really be in both.
Right. Yeah. They can't exist in the same plane.
Right.
Love and fear can't exist in the same plane.
Yeah.
And love, I mean, have you read A Course in Miracles?
No.
Okay.
You
should read it. Or do the lessons at least. But the first line, I'm going to butcher this, but it basically says like that no fear is real and only love is real.
Oh,
and
yeah,
heard that. I mean, I didn't say it right.
No,
all,
I know. I've heard it before.
That's the gist of it.
Mm. That's funny because I saw somebody else talking about A Course in Miracles like maybe 6 months ago, and I was like, oh, and I read about it and I thought I ordered it for some reason, but I never got it.
I
so
have
maybe
it on
this
Kindle.
Is my sign.
Yeah.
To do it.
I have it on Kindle.
It's when you're ready, it appears.
Exactly. It's definitely like heavy reading material to get through in the beginning.
Yeah, it's dense, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I actually had someone on the podcast recently who teaches A Course in Miracles, and I was like, yeah, so I'm about 3% through A Course in Miracles. How can I like get a little bit more of that read? And she was like, start with the lessons first. The daily,
okay.
There's 365 lessons, and each mm-hmm. day you read a lesson and like adapt that into your life.
Okay. That's manageable.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, okay, I can do that.
Okay, so let's see if there are any listener questions that we didn't touch on. I feel like we kind of did. Okay. How can I get in a habit of starting my day slowly?
Okay, that's such a great question. So it's a little bit easier if you work from home, obviously, because mm-hmm. you have control over your schedule. But starting your day slow doesn't necessarily mean that you have to carve out an hour of time to yourself. You
right.
know, it doesn't mean that you have to follow the prescription that you see of a wellness influencer on Instagram who wakes up in the morning, meditates for 20 minutes, then makes her matcha and
That's
does
me.
Some stretches. Yes. and like, I mean, I feel very grateful because that's me too, except with my bulletproof coffee. But I realize that like most people don't have the leisure that we have. And so instead it's asking, what does it mean to start your day slow? Sometimes that means not grabbing for your phone and being thrown into the world of like super fast speed, you know, not checking your email or not logging onto Instagram, and instead waking up and allowing yourself to walk into the bathroom and maybe taking a couple deep breaths before you brush your teeth or before you wash your face, and staying disconnected for as long as possible. Because I think we throw ourselves into the digital world so quickly, and that's why we think that everything is moving so fast and that our morning is slow and or is quick and hectic. And often what we'll find too, and I know I did this morning, I woke up and grabbed my phone. I woke up at 7, and then like before I knew it, it was 7:40, and I was just scrolling on my phone, and I'm like, it didn't even feel like 40 minutes.
Yeah,
oh my god, crazy. Yeah. And so being really mindful about how you wake up is an opportunity for you to really slow down and not just throw yourself and immerse yourself in this digital world that of course is moving fast because it's all at our fingertips. So I think it's one, knowing that like slow doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be an hour or 2 hour routine in the morning. Two, disconnecting from your phone for as long as possible. And you can even challenge yourself. Like I remember my husband and I, when we were like really bad on our phones in the morning, we first started challenging ourselves by saying, okay, the first 30 minutes, I'm not going to check my phone. The first 30 minutes of waking up. And then after, you know, 6:30 or 7:30, I can check my phone. And what I found 30 minutes into my day is that I didn't even want to check my phone after that.
Yeah.
So challenge yourself. Like if you are in a relationship, or even if you're single, or maybe you have roommates, challenge yourself to wake up, you know, turn your alarm off or use an alarm that's not on your phone, like buy an alarm clock, crazy. And challenge yourself for a week to give yourself to not check your phone for 30 minutes before you wake up, and see how that feels, and see like how much one you can get done in that 30 minutes when you're not like checking your phone or checking your email or changing the song on Spotify. And just like really being present with yourself, because I don't think we actually need that much time in the morning. I think time is wonderful, but when I was doing a streaming meditation every morning, Monday through Friday, and I had to be ready by 7:45 for that, and I'd wake up at 6:45, and I had, so that was an hour to be like fully camera ready and also make my coffee and meditate and journal about what I wanted to talk about on the meditation. And so I really didn't need that much time. But I was really intentional that that hour I wasn't on my phone,
right?
And I was being in service again of all of these things that I knew filled me up in a way that allowed me to connect to myself and be present. Does that make sense? Does that answer
totally.
It?
Yeah. And something that I've been doing is like when I get in bed at night to read, and when I get in bed at night to read, I plug my phone into the charger in the bathroom. And I've been leaving it there. I mean, luckily my body wakes me up 6:30 every single morning on the dot, so I don't need an alarm clock. But like in the beginning, I mean, it was like, it's like an addiction. It was like a physical withdrawal, a pull to go get my phone. And then like, and then I realized, and something that I was struggling with was waking up at like 5 every morning and then not being able to fall back asleep. And my phone would be right there. So after 15 minutes of not being able to fall asleep, I would just pick up the phone and then I'm off to the races.
Yeah, exactly.
So now that I have it in the bathroom, I even if I wake up early, I fall back asleep. And it's like a totally different thing. Like I'm not. It has like a magnetic pull on my brain if it's near me. Same thing, like I can't meditate with it near me or anything.
I think also one of the things that has been really helpful for me, at least in the beginning, is making sure that like if I am going to grab for my phone, whatever I'm grabbing for is going to be something really positive. So whether that's turning on, I have like morning affirmations that I listen to, or I created my Goddess's Guide to the Galaxy, which is a daily email email series that is a positive message every single morning that was really made for the woman that goes into her email
right
every single morning
yeah,
to make
like
sure
at
that,
least you can
yeah exactly at little, least you're yeah. like giving yourself some positive messages to start
yeah.
So that was like one of the things that was really helpful for me, that okay, if I am going to grab for my phone, let me at least be intentional with what the first thing that I'm looking at is. Mm-hmm. I'm not opening the email from somebody that I've been expecting. Mm-hmm. I'm not going on Instagram. I am going directly to read my own message that I sent, basically have sent to myself.
I love it.
Or putting on a meditation that is going to like start flooding my brain and my subconscious with positive messages.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, there's always going to be people that need something from you and want something from you
yeah.
on your phone. And there's always, it's not going anywhere.
No, it's not. It's not. Yeah.
It's such a bad way to wake up, but it's so hard to break the habit.
Yeah.
But yeah, what you're saying is true. Like all of a sudden, now that like I try to leave it in there, I'll go downstairs, make my matcha, which takes 5 minutes, mm-hmm. and then meditate, and all in, that's 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Whereas like if I'm on my phone, like I can lay there in bed and like scroll the New York Times and then like go check Twitter,
yeah.
which is never a good thing,
yeah.
like for news and like whatever, Instagram. And then before you know it, like time on your phone is different from real life time.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's why like when we talk about slow, like I think mm-hmm. people initially think like, oh, that means like how can I carve out more space
yeah.
and more time.
No,
actually
it's just more intentional.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, one more question, which we kind of touched on, but for somebody who is feeling like totally out of alignment and maybe like doesn't really have a concept of like spirituality and mm-hmm. all that, what is one thing that you would recommend to start? It's kind of a broad
yeah.
question.
I mean, I think meditation is great, but not always the best gateway drug into mm-hmm. the world of spirituality because it can be intense,
yeah.
you know, and if you don't have someone to hold space for you or like guide you through what's coming up,
mm-hmm.
You know, we all have trauma from our past. And usually in the beginning of a meditation practice, some of that can come up, whether it's remembering something or just like, again, having an impulse to do something.
Yeah.
It needs to be expressed and released out of the body. And that's why meditation is so beautiful. But with that being said, if you're way out of alignment and you're just like, I need something, I wouldn't say like start meditating right away. Like I think that having other points of awareness with yourself are more powerful to like hook you in. And it's going to vary person by person. So I think it's just taking a moment, and even as you're listening to this, unless you're driving, but just taking a moment and closing your eyes and like asking yourself, what is it that like brings me to a place of feeling love? Or what is it that brings me to a place of feeling confident? And when I think about my life, where do I see myself 6 months down the road or 12 months down the road? And how do I feel that in my body right now? Like, what is the energy that I feel in my body? Because our body doesn't lie.
Mm.
It's a lightness that we feel, you know, from thinking about the things or dreaming about the things that really excite us.
Mm-hmm.
And tuning into when we can feel that lightness in our body, when we can feel that expansiveness of like hope and of faith and of trust. And when we can feel that in our bodies, we can kind of peel back and say, okay, well, like, how can I create this? How can I create this in my life? Maybe that means you feel inspired to drive down to the beach today and watch the sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it means that you're going to pull out that pad of paper and your Sharpie and start to doodle tonight. Or maybe that means that instead of grabbing a drink after work, you'll get a mocktail instead and be really present with your coworkers or whatever you
mm-hmm.
might be doing. I think it's the little tiny changes that we can make rather than trying to overwhelm ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
When we bite off more than we can chew, we end up just throwing it away altogether. Again,
yeah.
it's coming back to the, if I can't like stick to this huge new practice, then I'm a failure. And
yeah.
so I always tell people, you know, start where you are, use the tools that you have and do what you can. And from there you get to grow. And we constantly are up leveling and understanding our new best. And so as long as we can continue to do our best as that grows and grows and grows, then we are on the spiritual path. You know, we are moving back into alignment. And when we're out of alignment, we know, because our body hurts.
Mm-hmm.
We have those gut feelings, the cringiness or the thoughts when we open up our email that are like, I cannot work with this client
yeah.
anymore. I can't do this job anymore. So we know when we're out of alignment.
Yeah.
And the moment that we start to tune in and like close our eyes and find that stillness, our intuition will be like, ah, she's listening. Yay. Okay. Let's give her just a little bit of breadcrumbs. We won't overwhelm her with like some big psychic development or something, but we'll give her like a little bit of breadcrumbs to get her back onto her path of alignment. And the more that you say yes to that, the easier that it becomes and the more fun that it becomes and the more like I said, just expansive that life gets to be.
Ugh. So good. So how can people work with you? How can they find you?
Yeah.
Where are you at?
Yeah, I'm all over. Oh my gosh. I'm actually not quite as all over as I used to be. But my podcast is called The Alchemized Life. And I work with women one-on-one. I have a VIP coaching program and it's really for spiritual business babes that are ready to show up for their business and show up for their soul's purpose, and get paid for their gifts. Like I said, there's nothing spiritual about being broke. And I really have the intention with everyone that I work with, everyone that I talk to know that like they are so worthy of receiving a shit ton of money and manifesting absolutely everything that they desire. Because I've been there and I've felt the other end of it. And I know what it's like to move through all of those money stories and those beliefs and the unworthiness and the lack of confidence. And so being on the other side, 98% of the time, I'm just like, all right, let's go ladies. So yeah, I do my VIP coaching program. It's all one-on-one. I also create different in-person experiences, whether there are smaller weekend retreats or long-term week retreats in different locations across the globe. In addition to that, I have my course, Be Your Own Mentor, which is really an accessible way to experience my one-on-one work in a self-guided course format. It's 10 weeks long. The first 5 weeks are all about personal transformation and really getting down to the energy and soul level of why we're doing the work that we're doing. It's really great for either women that have no experience of a spiritual practice and want to dive into all of it, or women that have some experience and want to gain more tools. And then the second 5 weeks is all about career transformation. So really starting to wake people up to the fact that they are so powerful and create a career that they love, whether that means becoming an entrepreneur or simply pivoting into a line of work that's in greater alignment with their soul. So that course is coming out probably around the time that this episode goes live.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And where can everyone find you on Instagram?
Oh, yes. At Ava Johanna and at The Alchemized Life. And my website is avajohanna.com.
And I link all of that in show notes. So everyone go down to the description if you can't remember all of that.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on.